From Carlisle to Hollidaysburg, Pittsburgh to York, this is a Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the American Legislative Exchange Council has published its annual Rich States, Poor States report. Co-author Jonathan Williams joins us with details on how Pennsylvania is doing relative to other states. Employment numbers for the month of March have been released, and Pennsylvania's urban areas continue to lag in job growth. Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi have an Allegheny Institute report. And the Lower Energy Cost Act would save Americans millions in gas and electric bills, but the U.S. Senate has not taken up the legislation. Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Jonathan Williams in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Commonwealth Court this past week dismissed a lawsuit filed by former Governor Tom Wolf challenging the General Assembly's passage of several proposed constitutional amendments in a single piece of legislation. Although voters would vote on each proposed amendment individually, Wolf had argued the combination of amendments into one bill violated the state constitution, which prevents the combining of unrelated topics into one legislative act. The court did not rule on the merits of the case, but dismissed the lawsuit, saying it is, quote, not ripe for judicial intervention, meaning it is not of immediate concern. A proposal by Governor Josh Shapiro to give targeted tax credits to nurses, police officers, and teachers is being viewed by Republican leaders as a Band-Aid approach to a much bigger problem. That is what Senate Majority Leader Joe Pittman told the Pennsylvania Press Club this week, arguing that such selective tax breaks merely move the tax burden onto other segments of the workforce. Pittman instead suggested cutting the state income tax for everyone would encourage more people to enter the workforce. The Pennsylvania-based Independence Law Center was in front of the U.S. Supreme Court this past week, arguing in favor of Gerald Groff. Groff is a former employee of the U.S. Postal System and was fired for refusing to work on Sundays. Groff maintained such a requirement violates his religious beliefs, as Christians understand Sunday is the Sabbath and the day most church services are held. Groff lost his case at the lower judicial levels, but is now asking the justices to protect his constitutional right to freely exercise his religion. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. The annual Rich States, Poor States report provides a snapshot into how well each of the 50 states are doing in a wide range of factors affecting economic competitiveness. Jonathan Williams is chief economist and executive vice president at the American Legislative Exchange Council. He is co-author of the report and joins us now with details. Jonathan, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Jonathan, the annual Rich States, Poor States report, tell us a bit about the history of the report. How long have you been doing it, and who all are contributors to the report?
Well, thanks, Loman, for having me back on the show. Greetings from the land of make-believe down here in Washington, D.C., where we are. Exciting new report out with Rich States, Poor States. We've got some great new rankings to help everybody think about how your state ranks versus the other 49 in terms of important categories as we talk about taxes and regulation and labor policy in the report. And when you look at the states that are doing it the best, and, you know, the reason we put this together 16 years ago was to give state lawmakers this guide. And we believe in these ideas of the 50 laboratories of democracy, that states are inherently in competition for jobs and for individuals as people continue to vote with their feet across states, and capital also is going across state lines, is figuring out what is the best policy mix in order to attract businesses and people and capital. And turns out the 15 variables that we measure to get these economic outlook scores in rich states, poor states that we're going to talk about here today is things that we know matter for economic growth. But then secondly, there are things that state policymakers in Harrisburg or the other 49 state capitals directly control. And so this year, Utah ranked number one for the 16th year in a row. In fact, we were just out in Utah as we launched this new ranking just a number of days ago. to help celebrate that. And there's so many good, I think, policy takeaways from how Utah has been able to both rank number one and then retain that number one ranking now for over a decade and a half. Things like tackling pension liabilities, something that really does perplex many state policymakers, and these liabilities are huge future property tax increases waiting to happen across states in the country. And things like looking at the flat tax, certainly that's something Pennsylvania already does, but Utah moved to a flat tax recently. They've also looked at ways to get property taxes under control. And so Utah's just a huge success story over these last 16 years at the top economic outlook in America. They're followed by North Carolina, Arizona, Idaho, and Oklahoma, the top five states. And then at the bottom of the index, bringing up the rear, we have New York at 50th out of 50. So if you all in Pennsylvania ever feel bad about your ranking, as we're going to talk about here in a second, you can always compare yourself to New York to feel a little bit better about how Pennsylvania is doing. But then Bernie Sanders, Vermont, Minnesota, New Jersey, and Illinois, no real surprises there. A lot of big government, high tax states around out the bottom five this year, Loman.
And Pennsylvania came in, ta-da, where?
Pennsylvania comes in 35 for economic outlook this year, and that's been fairly consistent. Pennsylvania's been in the mid to high 30s for the last number of years, so certainly not the worst in the New York, New Jersey range, but certainly a whole lot of areas for improvement there on how to really turn things around. And you know, we look at the outlook, as we've been talking about, but in rich states, poor states, we also have a way, we call it the economic performance ranking, is a backwards-looking measure that goes back the last 10 years to give us a historical sense of, given the policy environment that's been in place over the last decade in Pennsylvania and other states, how has that actually brought about economic growth or lack of growth? And this is the more concerning part of the ranking for Pennsylvania. And as you go to richstatespoorstates.org or alec.org to view the report, you'll see this, that Pennsylvania ranks 46th when it comes to economic performance rank. And that's things like, what is the gross state domestic product? The overall economic growth of a state. You know, what is the absolute domestic migration as Americans are going from state to state and voting with their feet? Are they coming into Pennsylvania or out of? In the case of Pennsylvania, we've lost nearly 250,000 on net over the last decade alone of people moving out of Pennsylvania to one of the other 49 states. And then it's things like job growth. Pennsylvania's job growth has been way under the national average at 2% over the last decade. That ranks 43rd out of the 50 states. So certainly some areas of concern, especially on the economic performance side, and a whole lot of areas of improvement when you look at the policy environment as well.
We are talking with Jonathan Williams from the American Legislative Exchange Council. We're talking about the annual Rich States, Poor States report. It ranks economic competitiveness among the 50 states, where Pennsylvania only ranking down there in the mid-30s, not doing real well. So, Jonathan, you said you have 15 different metrics that are included in how you determine these rankings. Taking a look specifically at Pennsylvania, can you tell us a little bit more about which metrics we are vastly underperforming the rest of the country in?
Several do stick out in that regard, Loman. And you look at some really important variables. Of the 15, I think you look at income tax rates on personal and corporate as two of the most important. Things like the death tax, is things like right-to-work status. Those are, I think, several of the most important of the variables. And unfortunately, in Pennsylvania's case, those are some of the weakest variables for Pennsylvania. If you look at the right-to-work status, that is, should someone have to join a union to be employed in that particular business place or that industry? This is something that across the Midwest we've seen states move in the last decade to become right-to-work states as they hear from employers saying, we won't even consider in some cases your state for a job site or for a new factory or for a new business opportunity unless you're a right-to-work state. It's a yes or no variable in that case. And that, unfortunately, is something that Pennsylvania still lags behind. Even as neighboring states like West Virginia and Kentucky and Indiana have become right-to-work states in the last 10 years. You look at the business income tax, which there's been some progress made on a current law and phasing down that rate over quite a few number of years. And that's, you know, important progress, I think, to be made if it actually happens. Those long phase-ins, sometimes it can get very risky for taxpayers if a rainy day comes and it's decided that needs to be paused for whatever reason. But the Pennsylvania business income tax rate, when you add in the state and the local rates is the second highest in the country. Only one state in America has a higher business tax rate than Pennsylvania when you go all in on state and local. And then you look at for a state to still have a death tax or an inheritance tax in this day and age when we've seen almost all the states repeal theirs because they want to keep their wealthy residents there to be taxpayers in their state versus other states after they retire. It's really a piece of economic malpractice for states still to have a death tax on the books. So if you were going to look at the areas that I think need the most improvement, those would be the areas I would start in out of the 15.
Are there any areas where Pennsylvania is doing reasonably well?
Yeah, there are a few there as well, and this is what Pennsylvania out of the bottom 10, for instance. So you look at having a flat tax is very important. Over the last year, we've had really a flat tax revolution happen across America as states decided they want to get rid of penalizing people the more successful they are in their state, and they want to make sure that their state is a place when you're successful that you decide to stay and you put down your roots and you raise a family there and you grow a business in your state. And the flat tax is a great way to do that. We've seen five states in the last year become flat tax states to try to follow the lead of the states that either go without income taxes or have a low flat rate like Pennsylvania, at least at the state level. Now, this gets complicated when you add in some of the local income taxes in places like Philadelphia, let's say, that really do hurt Pennsylvania's ranking in that regard. But having a flat tax is an important component of being a competitive state economy. And then you look at things like not going above and beyond when it comes to the minimum wage and charging something beyond the federal minimum wage. That's important. You see some states looking at becoming $15 or $28 an hour minimum wage states. And of course, when you talk to small businesses or individuals looking to enter the job market for the very first time, that can be an inhibiting factor of not having job opportunities if the minimum wage is too high in a state. So those are two of the areas that stand out. And, you know, there are several others. Sales tax burdens is not exorbitant in Pennsylvania relative to other states. And so it's not without having some positives in this report. But like I said, these are the factors of why Pennsylvania is not in the New Jersey or the New York category towards the bottom of the ranking.
Looking at the top five states, top 10 states in your ranking, Jonathan, are there any specific policies where they excel that put them in that top tier?
You look at the top five or 10 states, and they've got an overarching philosophy, I think, of keeping a prudent handle on their budgeting, because when you get budgeting right and you get the spending side of the equation right and you don't overspend, this is Thomas Sowell, one of the great economists, put it this way, the first law of economics is you have a scarcity of resources. We don't have everything we want, right? That's why we have to economize. But the first law of politics, he says, is to ignore the first law of economics. And that's where states get into trouble. When you look at the top end of the rankings here, Lohman, as they, you see these states that have a strong strategy that really have a concentration on keeping spending limited and watching that so it's not getting overextended. And then when the rainy day comes, they're not put into this crisis mode to have to raise taxes.
Jonathan Williams from the American Legislative Exchange Council. We've been talking about the latest edition of Rich States, Poor States. And Jonathan, tell us a bit about ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. And once again, give us the website where folks can go to read Rich States, Poor States.
Well, they can go to richstatespoorstates.org as well as ALEC.org to get a free download of the new rankings. But ALEC has been around. We're celebrating our 50th anniversary this year of trusted policy solutions that we work with men and women that are serving in the state legislative bodies across the country to really come up and believe that the ideas and the solutions to our problems are not going to come from a central big government here in Washington, D.C., but from the states and from local units of government and, of course, the people themselves. And so free markets, limited government, and federalism. Those are the three guiding ALEC principles. We've been at this for 50 years to develop those trusted policy solutions, and we look forward to the next 50 years ahead, working to empower individuals and empower free markets across the states.
Jonathan Williams from the American Legislative Exchange Council. As always, Jonathan, good to have you with us. Thank you.
Well, thanks so much, Lohman.
The Pittsburgh and Philadelphia regions continue to lag behind most cities of comparable size across the nation in job growth. For an update on the latest statistics, Frank Amrat and Eric Montardi of the Allegheny Institute for Public Policy have this Allegheny Institute report.
Hello, and welcome to the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm Eric Montardi. Joining me today is Frank Gamrat, the Executive Director of the Allegheny Institute. You recently wrote a brief that's available on our website, www.alleghenyinstitute.org, that looks at the Bureau of Labor Statistics and their release of data for February of 2023. Of course, the research that we do, you've looked at what that data means for the Pittsburgh metro area. Can you give our listeners an idea of what that data shows?
We have constantly kept up on the total non-farms jobs for the Pittsburgh MSA to sort of see how the region is growing economically, and it just hasn't been good. So what we did this time is I went back and looked at the 2000 and 2019 time frame. Of course, that is turn of the century to the base of the pandemic. And Pittsburgh's total non-farm jobs grew at about 4% rate. When you compare that with the national, it grew 14.3% rate. So we didn't even come close to keeping up with the national. Now, for those on the other side of the state in Philadelphia, and I just looked at the Pennsylvania component only, just those counties, only 7.4%. So statewide, not much better. Some of the other MSAs we looked at, Milwaukee and Cleveland, because they're considered pretty much somewhat similarly sized to Pittsburgh, and they didn't do any better. Milwaukee barely was positive, and Cleveland was down almost 5%. And then we looked at some of the metros that comprise our benchmark cities for the city of Pittsburgh study. It was Salt Lake City. They grew at 37%. Charlotte, which had total non-farm jobs growth of 34%. Columbus had total non-farm job growth of 19.3%. Omaha was a little bit less at 14%. So there's definitely a disparity between those areas in our area. Then we went and looked at the data from 2019 to 2022. Now, we use, of course, monthly annual averages, so this is for the entire year, to ask the question, how did these areas, these metro areas, grow and recover from the pandemic? Nationwide, it was only a 1.1% growth rate. The nation has kind of scuffled along here and is barely above water from where it was in 2019. However, Pittsburgh's down almost 4%. They still have yet to recover. Our area is still yet to recover from the pandemic. In Philadelphia, just barely negative is negative 0.2%. Milwaukee and Cleveland were also negative. The higher growing metro areas, Salt Lake City grew 6.4, Charlotte 5.3, Indianapolis 3.7, and Columbus 2.34. So they've had some growth better than a national number since the pandemic. Now, we look at this because we're trying to see, you know, what kind of policies will help us grow. And one of the things that we looked at even before we looked at policies is, you know, what about labor force? When you think about the pandemic did a lot of negative things, and one of it is it took people out of the labor force, and a lot of them just haven't returned, whether they were people that were older and didn't want to risk getting sick and they just dropped out, or if they were younger people that went out into a gig economy and just kind of worked for themselves, but they're no longer counted in the labor force. So again, we looked at the labor force and did the same thing, 2000 to 2019, and then again, 2019 to 2022. The national labor force grew at 14.7% from 2000 to 2019, Pittsburgh 2.35, Philadelphia 13. So both PA metros were well below the nation. Metro areas from our benchmark city all grew better than the nation, and Milwaukee and Cleveland grew worse. Cleveland was the only metro on our sample that actually had a negative labor force from 2000 to 2019. And again, since the pandemic, the national labor force has grown up 2.2%. Philadelphia and Pittsburgh negative, Milwaukee negative, Cleveland barely positive at 0.4%. And the metro areas from our benchmark city, Charlotte, Salt Lake, Columbus, and Omaha, all positive and better than the national rate. So you're asking these questions, okay, what does this mean in the grand scheme of things? And like we've been saying for years, the Pittsburgh area, Pennsylvania economy in a larger sense, just doesn't grow because of just some bad policies that are out there. We've talked about this before, a stifling regulatory environment. Now, for those of you that went to the Pennsylvania Leadership Conference, you know, I interviewed a scholar from George Mason University's Mercatus Center on regulations. And if you didn't go last year, make a point to go next year. It's going to be at the beginning of April again. And one thing he said that really stuck out is, if you want a license to braid hair, you've got to put in 300 hours of training to get a license to braid hair. And those are the types of regulations that are out there for a lot of occupations that become a barrier to entry for a lot of people to get into the economy. And it slows it down, because small businesses are really where you're going to see your best growth. I think those days of, oh, we had the steel industry here in Pittsburgh and that's carried us through, I don't think you're going to have those one industries pulling the economy along anymore. I think it's going to be more of a mix of economies. And the other thing that we've always talked about, of course, is this excessive fealty to unions. Public sector unions tend to be the largest problem for us, in as much as they really raise the cost of governing. Two that come to mind here on this side of the state, of course, is the Pittsburgh Regional Transit's Transit Authority, Transit Union. And what they've done is they've just made the transit so expensive around here. And your, Eric, your briefs have documented very nicely how that's gone, how those prices have gone up and to be expensive. Now, for those of you in Philadelphia think, well, that's a Pittsburgh problem, just remember this. When Governor Rendell put Act 44 in place and caused the turnpike to collect the tolls to pay PennDOT, PennDOT used some of that money, $250 million a year, to pay NetMass Transit subsidies for Philadelphia and Pittsburgh. So every time you cross one of the turnpike roads and pay a toll, a large portion of that is going off to pay for transit. So if you don't have such expensive transit, thanks to the public sector unions, you don't have to worry about all those tolls, or they wouldn't be nearly as expensive as they really are. And the other union that really, I think, has a stranglehold on Pennsylvania and elsewhere is the teachers union. Look at how expensive Pennsylvania education is, because teachers unions and their salaries and their work demands and the ability to strike has really put a lot of school districts in a bind, and they end up passing that cost along to the homeowners. And the reason we say homeowners is, as we all know, Pennsylvania has a main two-tier funding system, in as much as they get a little bit of state money, but they also rely heavily on local property taxes. And that's always been a real concern here in Allegheny County. And if you're going to rely on that kind of a source for funding for your education, that means your property taxes have to go up. And in Allegheny County, we've been studying reassessments and the need to redo assessments every so often here in Allegheny County. If you're going to use property taxes, you have to have fair assessments. Again, that's another issue you've covered in great detail over the years. So that's giving you a higher cost of government just because of those two public sector unions, and it reaches all corners of Pennsylvania.
Frank, great stuff as always, and we encourage our listeners to visit our website, again, www.AlleghenyInstitute.org. For Frank Gamrat, this is Eric Montardi, and this has been the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal.
With gasoline prices on the rise and electric utility costs at an all-time high, the Lower Energy Cost Act would help to bring those expenses under control. Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has details on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
Bill numbers, whether they be state or federal, often signal the importance of legislation to leaders of the chambers from which they originate. This 118th Congress, Speaker Kevin McCarthy made it clear that addressing ever-rising energy costs Americans have been shouldering under this Biden administration was a priority to him and his caucus. H.R. 1, the Lower Energy Costs Act, was introduced in March by U.S. Representative Steve Scalise of Louisiana. This legislation, if enacted, would make life more affordable by unleashing energy abundance today. Here in Pennsylvania, we've felt the squeeze in our budgets since gas began to rise at the advent of this administration's tenure, with a peak being reached last summer in June, setting a highest recorded average price of $5 a gallon for regular unleaded fuel. As Americans for Prosperity crisscrossed the Commonwealth and hosted temporary price drop events at gas stations, we heard the stories firsthand of Pennsylvanians who were literally choosing between a third meal in a day or filling up their vehicle. Now, Kiplinger reports gas prices are once again on the rise and poised for a spring surge. It is imperative that the U.S. Senate consider this legislation promptly, and we want to equip you with a context around H.R. 1's passage through the House, some of the key attributes of the legislation, and provide you with a course of action to take today to hold Senator Casey accountable for his inaction. 49 members of Congress signed on as co-sponsors to H.R. 1, including Pennsylvania delegation members Dan Muser, John Joyce, and G.T. Thompson. If you're listening and reside in one of those three congressional districts, we encourage you to thank those members for their strong stance. On March 30th, Speaker McCarthy passed the bill with 225 yes votes, including 4 Democratic yes votes and 1 Republican no vote. That came from Pennsylvania's congressman from the 1st Congressional District, Brian Fitzpatrick. Upon passage through the House of Representatives, Majority Leader Chuck Schumer in the Senate remarked the legislation was dead on arrival in his chamber. The Lower Energy Costs Act provides a mechanism for lowering taxes by eliminating new taxes on natural gas infrastructure. The bill would restore regular oil and gas leases on federal land, a needed action following the Biden administration's, through the Interior Department, delay of U.S. offshore oil and gas leasing program. H.R. 1 addresses the incredible regulatory hurdles that the federal government has erected for domestic energy exploration, production, and new energy supply chains. Permitting hurdles would be eliminated and duplicative regulations would be streamlined. Specifically, H.R. 1 right-sizes the National Environmental Policy Act, which has resulted in the often years-long delay by federal agencies to approvals of critical infrastructure projects. Americans for Prosperity led a coalition of 27 groups to urge the passage of H.R. 1 through the House. We sent a letter to the House following the bill's introduction, signed by each of those 27 organizations, and in it we noted, the Lower Energy Costs Act is an inflection point against the Biden administration's war on affordable energy that is fueling inflation and harming the environment by needlessly shifting energy production to higher impact countries and technologies. The policies of this administration and the regulations coming out of Washington have put affordable energy out of reach and put our country at a global disadvantage. More than 30 million households face high energy burdens and spend a substantial portion of their take-home pay for electricity, heating, and fuel. Bob Casey does not just owe it to Pennsylvanians to take action, but to Americans from coast to coast. Please visit AmericansForProsperity.org. I'm Ashley Klingensmith, State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania. You can connect with us on Facebook by searching at PAAFP and can follow us on Twitter by searching at AFP Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 28 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WNTP-AM and WFIL-AM in Lafayette Hill, along with WLSHAM in Lansford, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.